say is in a crucial stage. It's not because of foreign wars we wage, more to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people try to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing wet. Taking your right to self-defense. They say you're stable, but they don't make sense. Not turn into guns. All the unions always ask for. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dancing.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tap, coming to you live from historic Rome County, Tennessee. And thank you so much for joining me today. I certainly appreciate it. All right, so if you're at the BTR home platform today and you're hanging out, do not be angry at me if I do not reference you in the chat room, because at this very moment, I am unable to get into my own chat room. So I'm hoping that the chat room is in existence for you guys who are normally regularly here, and that you are interacting and having the usual fun and games that you usually do. I can't see you. I can't get in. I keep getting an error message and a message that says that the BTR engineers have been notified and will get this fixed. And then it also says shortly after that, in many cases, it will work the second time if you try again. I've been trying several times, and so far, sorry. Now, that does tend to make me think maybe no one will be able to get in. There won't actually be a chat room this fine evening. I do hope that is not the case. All right, so let's get started, shall we? Got some stuff I got to get to. I've only got an hour, so I'm going to have to jump in. But I want to start out with the fact that the left is delusional. That's going to be one of the overwhelming themes of today. We've known that for a while, actually, the continuing effort to make sure that the collusion delusion doesn't go anywhere is all the proof we need. But in case you've missed it, by all means, go to YouTube and search for A Message from the Future with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. AOC has done it again. She has out-Alexandria'd herself. Man, this is just so rich, so fun. I will go into this in more detail probably on Wednesday night's live show. please, if you haven't seen it yet, go there now. Go there often. Share it, play it, caption it however you want to. The name of the video, one more time, A Message from the Future with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from a group called The Intercept. Man. So much funny, so much delusion. I don't even know where to start. I can't. I just can't. All right. Still won't let me in the chat room. I'm still trying. All right. We're going to start with something that is not on the show description tonight because this one is, well, it's breaking. It was breaking a little while ago, and it's really picking up some steam right now. But it also fits the delusion of the left. In this case, from the Guardian, enunciation being important. According to the headline here, from The Guardian, we've seen drafts of Mueller's three-count indictment of Trump. Team Mueller, however,'s response to that, that's not possible. They actually said, the documents that you've described do not exist. Okay, so here's the deal. On Tuesday, which, of course, if you're listening live, you know this is Tuesday evening. If you're not listening live, if you're catching us somewhere in podcast form or in the archives, or if you're listening at KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority, then by all means, let me let you know that the time of this broadcast being aired live is May 28th, 2019, just a smidge after 8 p.m. Eastern. Now, on Tuesday, that being today at the time of the broadcast, The Guardian broke the story of the key claim of a new book by, anybody want to guess? Anybody remember? Big-time anti-Trump book about a year or so ago, Michael Wolff. Now, according to the new book by Michael Wolff, Special Counsel Robert Mueller drew up a three-count indictment against Donald J. Trump, the kicker of puppies and eaters of babies, supposedly for obstruction of justice. One of the documents, the outlet says that they've obtained and reviewed, says that specific bit. Queen now says the stunning revelation is contained in Siege, Trump Under Fire, which will be published a week from now on June 4th. It is the sequel to Fire and Fury, Wolf's bestseller, on the first year of the Trump presidency, which was published in 2018. The left-leaning outlet also reported that The Guardian obtained a copy of Siege and reviewed the documents concerned. So now they claim that not only did they see the manuscript, but they saw at least a copy of the original document. The Guardian notes that Wolf specifies that the book's findings on the Mueller investigation are, quote, based on internal documents given to me by sources close to the office of the special counsel. But when The Guardian contacted Mueller's team, you know, about the alleged incident and the alleged indictment draft, they received some, well, I'm sure disappointing to them, news, and certainly disappointing to anybody out there who was hoping Wolf's latest bombshell might actually be legitimate. The response was, and I quote, from Mueller spokesman Peter Carr, the documents that you've described do not exist. So Siege is indeed Wolf's second book on the Trump administration. And as The Guardian notes, Mueller's flat denial of the existence of the documents on which the book is based will only add to controversy and debate around the launch of Wolf's eagerly awaited new book. Really? Controversy and debate? What are we going to be debating? Why would the Mueller team lie about it? If they had drafted this, then they would have also recommended an obstruction charge. They would have. If they had taken the time to write a draft, if they had taken the time to write up a three-count indictment for obstruction of justice, they would not have done that and then just sat on it. Unless unless maybe part of the team hasn't written very many briefs and needed to practice. Okay, well, since you need a little practice on this, if we were going to do this, this is a situation. Now you write it up. And it had a completely fictitious thing for practice. And given the nature of what went on here, I could see some fan fiction being written. Because let's face facts. The Mueller report was, in fact, a solution in search of a problem. It was, in fact, this ridiculous notion that we know Orange Man bad, now we just have to figure out how we prove it. That was the assumption from the beginning, and that was the effort all along. And they were extremely disappointed that they didn't come up with anything that actually met legal standards to go after and try to bring this president down. They didn't do it. They would have happily if they could. They didn't have it. It's not there. Again, that's not to give Trump a free pass. That's not to say Trump hasn't done some bad things. That's not to say that Trump hasn't done some morally questionable things. But it is to say that Trump is not your standard polished politician. Ooh, breaking news right there. Right? So if he didn't know, then he's going to have some fundamental issues, because all he has to go on is the television and dramas and what he's seen the swamp dwellers do. And if you thought all of that was actually par for the course, if you thought it was okay, if you thought it was all legal, then there's nothing that Trump has even suggested, had his aides went along with them, that is even noteworthy. Because we know that folks for some time in the swamp have done, well, nefarious things. So very nefarious. Nefarious. Okay. So at any rate, the idea, the mention here that it's going to add to controversy and debate, as long as you're talking about Wolf's book being full of crap and made up, which was a lot of the controversy and debate around the last one, then yes, you're right. But sadly, there are still going to be people on the left that you're going to see hour upon hour on CNN and MSNBC and CBS News and NBC News and every other place that has a news outlet that hates Trump. And they're going to talk about how this bombshell is true, and they're going to double down their efforts to get Mueller and now probably members of his team to come in front of Congress and testify, because they've got to get to the bottom of this. They have to. It's a matter of national security. Oh, and by the way, we don't want Donald Trump declassifying anything when it comes to how the investigation into the Russian collusion got started. We don't need that. That's it's a cover up. Releasing information is a cover up. You keep using this word. I do not think this word means what you think it means. Anyway. So, yeah, I get a kick out of the wording there. It's going to add to the controversy and debate. Yeah, you think. Okay, so The Guardian also notes that Wolf found that the paramount issue of the special counsel's investigation quickly became whether or not Trump would allow it to continue. I think that was pretty well put to bed at 6 months in. I mean, Trump wanted it over quickly, understandably so, not that he was hiding from anything, because he still didn't stop it. Would have been within his rights to put an end to it. Never did. Let it continue to the end so that he could be exonerated. Has been exonerated for legal issues. Couldn't get him on anything legally. So the Mueller folks demanded that everybody know that they think he's a smelly poopy head. And that's really all that boils down to. We want to make sure that all of America knows the tone in which we wrote this. It is true that we did not have enough evidence to proceed, but he's a really, really, really bad orange man. So at any rate, yeah, early on, Trump was probably all like, well, we got to squash this so we can get to the business of actually running the government and serving the American people. That was the idea. Part of the report here says, of Mueller's thinking Wolf writes that as a former FBI director, he had not risen to the highest levels of the federal government by misconstruing the limits of bureaucratic power, and had therefore continually weighed the odds with his staff about whether the president would fire them. Thus, Wolf writes, the very existence of the special counsel's investigation had, in a sense, become the paramount issue of the investigation itself. Man, this guy can write some drama, can he? I tell you what, Wolf should be writing for one of these shows on freaking networks that loves to bash the president. If The Good Fight was still on, she'd be there. The Good Fight is. It's just on CBS All Access, right? It's The Good Wife that was on the regular network for a while and isn't on anymore. But, he sounds like he could write for The Good Fight. Sounds like he could probably work on some scripts for an HBO new series where they do nothing but trash the president. I think they could do it. I like it. The paramount issue is the investigation itself. Okay, so Wolf's credibility and journalistic practices, heavy on the air quotes there, came under fire after the release of his first Trump-themed book, Fire and Fury. And, of course, The Guardian describes that book as having contained many assertions confirmed by later works, like Bob Woodward's Fear, Trump in the White House, and notes that former Trump advisor Steve Bannon was booted from the administration due to his alleged role as a major source for Wolf's book. I don't think you can use someone else's highly slanted, highly opinionated fictional writing as justification or verification of someone else's highly slanted fictional work. It's like getting a couple of fan fiction writers together on a Buffy the Vampire Slayer message board and claiming that, well, this means obviously that Angel was homosexual because they both wrote a couple of fiction stories. Angel and Spike got it on, or some crazy crap like that, which I have seen stories like that, by the way. I haven't read a lot of the fan fictions there because I'm constantly thinking, really? Seriously? But the point being that I can sit here and make stuff up, and then somebody else can come along a few months later and make some stuff up, and maybe they make up some of their stuff based on the things I made up. And then for me to sit back and say that, see, I am now vindicated. This is what I was saying all along. Somebody else said the same. That doesn't make it true. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So anyway, as the web continues, it becomes quite, quite insane. But the bottom line is they are definitely living in a delusional state. Again, a message from the future with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Consider it proof. Consider it evidence. Consider it whatever you want to consider it. But The Guardian is out here just straight up talking about how it was, and they're straight up being told, sorry, no, you can't be seeing that because that doesn't exist. So there you go. Become a major conversation point, Will. And then, understand that it's essentially already been debunked by Mueller himself. So there you have it. Still can't get in the chat room yet. I hope if anybody is hanging out in the room, because it should be, that you guys understand I can't get in for some strange reason. It's not letting me. There's a mistake in the BTR. Engineers who are not working at this hour, but they've been in notified. So anyway, just having some fun. BTR guys, you need some time off. I'm not I'm not knocking on you. I just think the message is kind of silly. Okay, so now into the stories on the show description. We've talked about this to a degree. We've talked about the huge rise in anti-Semitism, especially within New York. Well, according to NYPD records, there has now officially been an 83% rise in hate crimes within New York City alone. They're calling it literally an anti-Semitism crisis. And I don't think they're using the word crisis as hyperbole. I don't think they're using the word crisis as a means to garner attention. I think they're using the word because it is legitimately getting to the point where it is not safe for Jewish Americans to simply walk about in traditionally Jewish communities in New York. And I would call that a crisis. Anyway, according to the Wall Street Journal, the New York Police Department has recorded a truly eye-popping increase in the citywide hate crimes over the past year. Specifically, NYPD statistics reveal that hate crimes have increased by a whopping 83%, and the city council's speaker mentions no words in lamenting the epidemic persistently affecting the city, with the nation's largest Jewish population, as an anti-Semitism crisis. Now, this is what's actually in the journal. The New York Police Department had 176 complaints of hate crimes from January 1st to May 19th, the most recent date for which the data is available. According to figures provided by the Wall Street Journal, that is an 83% increase in hate crime complaints across all categories compared with the same time period in 2018. The New York City Council created the Office of Hate Crime Prevention in January in order to try to coordinate city agencies' efforts to address illegal bias incidents. Saying, quote, our residents should feel free to worship without fear, and yet they can't right now. This from City Council Speaker Corey Johnson, who also said, back to quoting now, we have an anti-Semitism crisis in New York. It's a national problem, but New York accounts for way too many incidents. Now, experts disagree on the reasons behind the rise in crimes. But the New York Police Department Chief of Detectives, Dermont Shea, said that a news conference earlier this month, that many individuals arrested for hate crimes have previously committed similar acts. Quote, things are out of control, said a former state assemblyman, Dove Hyken, from Brooklyn, by the way, who is founder of a group, Americans Against Anti-Semitism, continues saying all the resources in the world should be allocated to this purpose. Now, that might be a little bit of an overreach, a bit of an overreaction, but I feel you, dog. I mean, I'm right there. Something needs to be done. Everybody needs to wake up and realize that this is not just an American thing. It is happening throughout Europe. It's been on the rise. It's been an ongoing thing. It's happening around the world. But there has been such a huge uptick in anti-Semitism in the United States recently. It is, or at least it should be, extremely concerning for all Americans. Now, the Daily Wire's reported before on the shocking rise in anti-Semitic incidents in New York City over the past couple of years. Many of those articles I have read myself, and it's been some of the source of the information that I've had as I've tried to bring this information to you. In fact, I rely very heavily on the Daily Wire. Quite often I've mentioned that. Now, curiously, however, much of the news surrounding this ridiculous rise in the this anti-Semitic violence, well, it's gone either unreported altogether or it's certainly underreported by the mainstream media, especially at the national level. If you're not a local news source or news outlet, I should say, then you're probably not talking about it. Why? Because, again, the Jewish communities are not part of those protected hierarchy groups in the intersectionality coalition anymore. They used to be part of it, but now they've become a liability. They've moved the transgendered anyway. I was going to go down this long list, but the bottom line here is the intersectionality coalition really likes Muslims too. And it's hard to complain very much about anti-Semitism when you're trying to make one of your most protected classes a group of people that by the doctrine of the philosophy they've embraced and claim as a religion happens to be very heavy with anti-Semitism in its very nature, its very precepts, the very doctrine. You know, go kill the Jew. Yeah, that's one of the big rewards you're going to get when the time comes, is you're going to get to kill a Jew. Ooh, some reward. Tell me, how is that not anti-Semitism, by the way? Anyway, so the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it because then they would have to explain that another member of the intersectionality coalition probably needs to tweak some of their beliefs. You would think, since they want to protect women's rights too, or claim to, they would already be making that case. But hey, you know, the Jews, the homosexuals, the women, who cares? We like Muslims now. And they'll say it like that. And the Muslims aren't really the problem. It's Islam that's the problem. You know, it is all these tenets and all these commandments that Muhammad claims Allah gave to him that are the problem. This belief that everyone's a secondhand citizen except for them. Anyway, Ben Shapiro actually wrote about November of last year why he thought that might, when he said, quote, Jews don't fit the intersectionality classification necessarily in order to receive narrative attention from either the mainstream media or from progressive groups. Orthodox Jews, who are often the targets of anti-Semitic attacks, aren't seen as victims. They're victimizers who aren't conservatives and who can't be linked with conservatives, aren't seen as victimizers. So, there's a reason that Al Sharpton, who helped initiate a riot against Orthodox Jews in Crown Heights back in 1991, has a show on MSNBC where he opines about President Trump's linkages to white supremacist anti-Semitism. Certain types of anti-Semitism are worthy of note. Others aren't. And those on the left often decide which is which, with simple reference to a preferred narrative in which Jews are part of the white privileged class, unless they are victimized by white supremacists. So basically what Ben is saying there is Jews can be part of the protected class as long as the people that are spouting the anti-Semitism can be linked to white supremacists. In other words, Ilhan Omar, we can't talk about her anti-Semitism because she's not a white supremacist. Rashid Tlaib, we can't talk about her anti-Semitism because she's not a white supremacist. Linda Sosor, we can't talk about her anti-Semitism because she's not a white supremacist. They're good little warriors for the leftist cause at the moment. So as such, we're not going to talk about that. If we can't point our finger directly at a white supremacist, we can do intellectual gymnastics to somehow actually try to make the point that Ben Shapiro is involved in creating white supremacist ideology to target Jewish people, which, by the way, Ben Shapiro, if you're not aware, happens to be an Orthodox Jew and is very, very devout in his religious practices, making it not very likely to be the case. But I have seen articles in the New York Times. I've seen articles in the Washington Post. I've seen articles at the Huffington Post, where they have all made an effort to somehow point a finger at Ben Shapiro as if he's the cause of anti-Semitism in America. Not that because he's Jewish and people are going to hate him and thereby hate all Jews. No, no, no. Based on things that he said. And I love it. It's the same thing in the case with Ben Shapiro as it still is and has been for quite some time with Rush Limbaugh. Oh, we hate that Rush. Rush Limbaugh says all these crazy. Rush Limbaugh is a hater of women. Rush Limbaugh is a maniac. Rush Limbaugh controls the Republican Party. And they've not listened to a word that has come out of his mouth. Don't know what he said. Just know what somebody else told them he said about it. I dare say there's plenty of people on the left that the last time they actually read anything from Ben Shapiro was back when he was still 17 years old. And he's changed his opinion on a lot of the things he said back then. Because he was still a kid then. He's grown up. Anyway, the point's still here. We're not getting this reported. It's back to that delusional complex we were talking about at the top of the show. The attack is real. Nobody is under more attack in the United States right now, more so than Jews, especially Orthodox Jews. Anti-Semitism is probably at its highest level in the United States, possibly ever. But you would never know it if you trusted the national mainstream media to report it to you. You would never know it if you were only expecting the New York Times to tell you about it. Because mum is the word. Much like the article that I wrote not too long ago that you can still find at Patriot USA. Go to patriotusa.com. You can find my article there where I was talking about the roaming bands of Somali teenagers that were attacking people with hammers at a train station close to the University of Minnesota. Talking about that and the reason you're not hearing about that on the mainstream, and still not, by the way, not a huge outcry of the media is reporting this like you should be, because it challenges the narrative. They don't want you to challenge the narrative. All right, so with that, this is just an hour-long show. We're right about at the halfway point. No, just a smidge past it, actually. Let's go ahead and do the Edwards Notebook and then the Songs and Stories for Soldiers, a Veterans Tip of the Day, and then we will jump right back into it. Stay with me. I will, fingers crossed, be right back.
President Trump is correct in his decision to stand up to China, but are tariffs the only way to show that he means business? Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, for decades, China has been allowed to take full advantage of the United States via trade deals that favored that nation. As a result, China has imposed unfair tariffs against U.S. products since the 1980s. The Chinese government is predatory in its ongoing efforts to steal intellectual property and harvest the fruits of freedom while imposing a brutal communist dictatorship over the Chinese people and threatening Taiwan. Yes, tariffs are a good way to hit back at China. I believe that slapping a huge carbon tax on every single product China exports to our republic would not only contribute to the reduction of the trade deficit, but also bring more needed attention to China being the number one polluter of the Earth's environment. Whether it's plastics in the ocean or unchecked burning of dirty unfiltered coal. So keep up the good work, Mr. President, and also utilize a carbon tax on Chinese products and use the surplus to help our U.S. farmers. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on AmericaMatters.us and catch a page from the Edwards Notebook on our newest affiliate, Saturdays on AM 1600 WAAM, Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Sponsored by David E. Garrett Jewelers.
Dan Perkins here with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. Many veterans are unsure what benefits they have earned for their service. Here is your Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. The VA can't help you until they know who you are. So go to the VA.gov website and look for a DD-214. Fill it out and you'll get a copy of your service record. Take it to the local VA office to see what benefits you can qualify for. You protected us, so it's time for America to protect you. This has been your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All righty then. That was your Veterans Tip of the Day from Songs and Stories for Soldiers. And I'd like to take the opportunity to invite you to check out Songs and Stories for Soldiers. Just do a quick Google search and see what they're doing over there. May decide that you might be willing to donate a little time or maybe even a little cash if you can afford it. Help those folks out. They do some amazing stuff, and they're working alongside the Honor Air Flights now too, which is another great thing to be involved with, helping our veterans get to go see the monuments, the memorials to them that maybe they otherwise wouldn't get to go see. And quite honestly, we're still coming out of Memorial Day. This past weekend was Memorial Day weekend. That's a big reason why, even though it's Tuesday at the time of this broadcast live, still has felt like Monday all day long, to the point that I almost forgot I was supposed to do a show tonight. It was like, da-da-da, feels like Monday, da-da-da-da. Oh, wait, it's not. So here I am. All right, so jumping back in with the main topics here in the show description, and I'm going to try to sneak in both of them that are still listed. Would it surprise you to find out that according to the Department of Justice statistics, that 43% of all federal offenses are committed by non-citizens? Now, even former Attorney General Jeff Sessions stated at the time that he was still the Attorney General that every single crime committed by an illegal alien is by definition a readily preventable crime. Now, I have links in the show description, should you be here at the BTR platform, to both the Department of Justice statistics, which I don't often do that in the show descriptions, but it is there. And I have a link to Jeff Sessions' statements as well. But part of his statement, the most poignant to this particular issue, says that every crime committed by an illegal alien is, by definition, a crime that should have been prevented. It is outrageous that tens of thousands of Americans are dying every year because of the drugs and violence brought over our borders illegally, and that taxpayers have been forced year after year to pay millions of dollars to incarcerate tens of thousands of illegal aliens. Now, these aren't opinions. These are facts. This is the impact. It's a small part of the impact. And when you take the time to slide in and focus on angel families, then you see an even deeper, personal, never healing impact on the lives of Americans, not only the people who have been victims of the violence, but the survivors, the family members who are also victims, because they're going to have to move forward for the remainder of their life without a loved one. That alone should be enough to get people to move forward. That alone should be enough to get people to try to better control our southern border and our northern border alike. But then you take a look at places like the state of Washington. Washington has been experiencing an upsurge in crime committed by illegal aliens. Earlier this month, the Seattle Times noted how a 51-year-old Seattle area man charged with luring and second-degree assault after he allegedly tried to force a 14-year-old girl into his pickup truck turned out to be a twice, not one time, but two time, deported illegal alien. Seattle-based radio host Dory Monson opined on the lawless sanctuary city laws that mollycoddle criminals, aliens, throughout the state of Washington, saying, quote, "We have the most lax laws. We're attracting drug vagrants, and we're attracting illegal immigrants. We're seeing the ramifications of it on the streets with all of the women who are being sexually assaulted, from the woman on the billiard car dealership to Kelly Horan at Golden Gardens to this teenage girl. Washington is the best place to be if you're an illegal immigrant. We've got sanctuary everything and a governor who tells you you're a pillar of the community when you come into this country illegally and commit crimes. What a great place to come and abduct 14-year-old girls." Well, he makes the point pretty well. The point is made right there. If you need any proof, take a look at San Francisco. If you need any proof, take a look at what's been going on now in Los Angeles. The entire state of Washington is now doing this. And, well, so last week, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, better known as ICE, took it upon itself to hone its crosshairs upon and utterly excoriate Washington State's lax sanctuary city regime, saying, quote, "Immigration and Customs Enforcement ripped Washington for becoming the latest state to enact policies that protect illegal immigrants from local law enforcement and federal authorities. ICE maintains that cooperation by local law enforcement is an indispensable component of promoting public safety. It's unfortunate that current local and state laws and policies tie the hands of local law enforcement agencies that want and need to work with ICE to promote public safety by holding criminals accountable and providing justice and closure for their victims." I mean, this is in a statement that was released by ICE Thursday of last week. They released this statement to the Daily Caller News Foundation, by the way, just as an FYI. "Sanctuary policies not only provide a refuge for illegal aliens, but they also shield criminal aliens who prey on people in their own and other communities. When ICE officers and agents have to go out into the community to proactively locate these aliens, it puts personnel and potentially innocent bystanders at risk." Well, that's true. It is part of the job. But the point here is that local law enforcement's already out doing that. Local law enforcement already comes in contact with these criminal aliens quite frequently. It would not be such a burden to local law enforcement to hold and detain these folks in the event that there is a pickup order that's been placed by ICE. Hold on to them. We'll send somebody to come get them. When you have sanctuary policies in place, it encourages not just the people who break the law of our immigration policies. It encourages the truly criminal-minded to come there because they know they are shielded from the worst punishments. You've made it clear. Now, I want you to look back at the time between Donald J. Trump's electoral win and his first day in office. And I want you to think back. You can look into the archives. You can look at almost every news outlet across the country. There were stories after stories about self-deportation by illegals. The reason there was this huge amount of self-deportation is because they did not want to be caught and because they believed that Donald J. Trump was going to be the sheriff that he proclaimed himself to be and that he was going to clean up this town. It did not take long for the Democrats to stand in the way and prove that they would protect these people from the new sheriff in town. And that's what we see here. So now they come, they flaunt, it's worse than ever. And they know Donald Trump, no matter what he tries to do, is being blocked. He's being stopped. And sadly enough, the people that are stopping them in the name of humanity are really only doing this because they don't like Donald Trump. They don't really give half a rat's backside about an illegal immigrant family. Now, I will use the term illegal immigrant in this case, even though I don't typically use that term. But I'll use that to differentiate between the folks that only broke immigration laws to try to get a better life in comparison to the people that come here just to break any law they feel like. The truly criminal of the criminal aliens. And I don't want to split hairs here. Yes, obviously, if you're here illegally, you are a criminal according to the code. Yes, it is true. And I don't hold a lot of sympathy, but we are living in an age where this distinction is made by even Donald Trump, as well as the left wants you to believe that all of them are that. Clearly, they're not. At any rate, according to the Daily Caller, the newly enacted legislation that ICE was complaining about, it largely prohibits local law enforcement from asking about an individual's immigration status or place of birth, with an exception if it pertains to a criminal investigation. And it's worded in a way that it has to be a criminal investigation that the local law enforcement is involved in. They're not allowed to look to see what ICE has done. They're not allowed to check and see if there's a hold order or request that's been put in place. And I'm sorry, there are certain things that the local folks should be looking to help. This is not good for your community. It doesn't make your community safer. We hear over and over again from folks on the left, primarily politicians, how these people must stay in the shadows. And so when something criminal happens to them, they're afraid to reach out to the police to get help because they too are criminals. Well, yeah, I get that. But at this point, they should know. They should know. I don't care how deep into the shadows you are. If you're the victim of some violent act, you can go to the cops and you're going to be okay. You are a protected class. We don't have the jackboots running around here, rounding up folks, demanding to see your papers. Papers, need your papers. No, that's not happening. So it's some BS. So ICE is completely and totally within their fundamental rights to have that conversation and to be angry with the entire state of Washington, of Oregon, and California. They are. They should be. I'm down with it. Be mad at them. Tear them up. At some point, there needs to be a lawsuit, because while I am for the idea of nullification, I like nullification, I like the 10th Amendment, I do think that there are certain things that if it is a clearly enumerated power for the federal government, and immigration laws happen to be one of them, I think the states should, in fact, do everything within their power to assist the federal government there. I do have kind of this gauged value. I believe in the Constitution. I like how the Constitution is laid out. And yes, whenever the federal government is involved with overreach, then yes, nullification is perfectly legitimate, and I'm on board. Even if it's something I don't like, I'm okay with the state saying, hey, this is not something the federal government has a power over. So do it. Immigration law, in my mind, because it is a specifically enumerated power in the Constitution, that doesn't fall in the same category. Now, I have had multiple conversations with some folks over at the 10th Amendment Center, and they disagree with me with that. But, you know, that's okay. I still love those guys anyway. All right. Now, just a few minutes left. I definitely wanted to get to this story because, well, you're not likely to hear about it from too many other places, but there's so many moving parts and social justice warrior type stuff going on with this that I just had to. So turns out there's this award-winning journalist who claimed that she was abused, that she was racially profiled by cops, and that she was the victim of police brutality. Now, then this video gets released, and I've watched the video, and I'll talk about the video a little bit later, but here's the basic story, and then we'll get to the rest. Jenny Monette, a self-styled award-winning journalist and a Native American activist, claims that she was racially profiled both at a liquor store and by responding police officers and was the victim of police brutality. However, a released surveillance video from the night of her arrest for aggravated DWI in Santa Fe, New Mexico, it captures the other side of the story, which includes Monette making obscene gestures at liquor store employees and screaming obscenities at the law enforcement officers. Court documents that were obtained by KRQE Local News 13 say that the journalist was turned away by the liquor store when she tried to buy two bottles of wine while allegedly appearing to be drunk. According to surveillance videos obtained by the news network, Monette pulls up to the store, goes inside, but is refused service. She then went back out to her car before she went back inside and started screaming and making obscene gestures towards the staff. After the encounter, both Monette and the employees at the liquor store called authorities. Footage from the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Department, which was also obtained by News 13, captured the activist's seemingly belligerent behavior. Now, after Monette denies that she's been drinking to the deputy, he asked her, "How come I can smell a really strong odor of alcohol?" "I don't know. I've not been drinking." The woman then said that she was racially profiled by staff at the liquor store. The officer asked, "How were you racially profiled?" is what I'm trying to get at. So he's still interviewing her. At this point, she's not in any real trouble yet. Her response, "Because I'm a brown woman. Do you not see that?" Now, things really got heated when Monette refused to take a sobriety test, saying, "I'm not walking any effing line for you. You hear me? I'm not walking any effing line for you." She kept doing that. As officers then cuffed Monette, she repeatedly screamed, "Police brutality." I mean, over and over again, she kept screaming to whoever was going to listen. Anybody within the earshot, that parking lot, nearby parking lots, "Police brutality." Then more insults and accusations. During the encounter, Monette reportedly told the deputies multiple times that she's an award-winning journalist and to look her up. Still, Monette is sticking to her story and has even threatened to sue the TV news outlet at KRQE for their coverage of the story, which, by the way, roughly about 20 years ago, Monette worked for this particular TV station. So she is a journalist. She kind of does her own independent thing now, but she's worked within the industry officially in the past. And it's one of those things that's kind of he said, she said, until you start looking at the video. Now, looking at the video like I have, here's what I can tell you. What happened inside the store, she doesn't look drunk. Not really. But there was the conversation about the strong smell of alcohol. Now, she looks angry. Now, to be fair to everybody involved, I don't know what she looks like when she's drunk. That could be her mean, angry, drunk look. But as far as what I've seen other people, now she does seem way more belligerent in the interaction with the police officers. I kind of get weary when somebody starts to say, do you know who I am? Why don't you look at me? Here's the deal, Ms. Monette. You may be an award-winning journalist. You may be. And actually, evidently you are. I'm not going to take anything away from you. But it should not matter at that point if you're an award-winning journalist, if you're the mayor of the town, or if you're some individual who's just blowing through town, working construction jobs, and you've stopped off to pick up a little something for the hotel that night. It should not matter at all what any of those circumstances are as far as how the officers treat you. Everything I saw, the officers appeared to be attempting to treat you with respect, and they were attempting to get to the bottom of things. Now, you may have been offended by the question about why do you smell like there's a lot of alcohol here. That might have offended you. But if you are, in fact, completely sober, then don't give me some BS story about standing on a principle. Take the field sobriety test. Because in most states now, and I'm pretty sure an award-winning journalist would know this, in most states, a refusal to take a field sobriety test immediately gets you charged with a DWI. And being belligerent to police officers is not going to help your cause. And here's the other thing. The video does clearly show the officers making every effort to, in the most humane, the nicest I've ever seen, quite honestly, when they were taking you officially into custody and handcuffing you. You're screaming police brutality. That is about the nicest I have seen cops actually cuff someone. That was not brutality. And quite honestly, it's at that point between the do you know who I am attitude and the screaming of police brutality when they were being extremely polite and professional during that point. Those are the things that kind of make me think maybe they were right. I'll also throw in that for most liquor stores, now there may be an exception. Santa Fe seems like an odd place for it if that's the case. Usually the only color they care about is green. They looked like they had plenty of business that evening from the line when you came back in and were flipping birds and saying mean stuff. But I still don't think they would have turned you away unless they had a good reason. I think they probably did think you were drunk, and that behavior doesn't help your case either. So I'm going to leave that at that. That's going to have to be it for tonight. Sorry, anybody who might have been listening live trying to get into the chat room. Don't know what went on there, but that is that. As always, please remember to join me tomorrow, Wednesday night, live for the two-hour show. Be back here at that point. We'll start at 7 then. And remember, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort and, more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. Good night, everybody. Please check out patriotmusic.com whenever you get a chance. And if you have in the past, but it's been, even if it's only been a couple of weeks, check it out again. New stuff popping up all the time. Thanks to Matt Fitzgibbons for letting me use some of his music. This is one of those tunes now. In the meanwhile, I'm out. Have a great night, everybody. See ya. Just a little squirrel.
is using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. You teach the lesson to your daughters and sons, to fear the government, to fear your guns. Now the new world order's cruel, well they're making their demand. They don't feel safe if you are wrong, you say gun control is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. Gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family. Using both hands.